Are we fortunate or what to have this every Sunday? Thank you, man. As we used to say where I grew up, you're spoiled and rotten. And that's a good thing. Well, here we are in the fourth Advent, fourth Sunday of Advent. Upon us, Christmas Day will be here very soon. Can you believe it? And then we'll be sliding into 2021. Get used to that real quick, man. It's going to be great, though. We've already gotten a good start on it. I shared with you a number of weeks ago at the beginning of Advent that we were looking at, and emphasis each week a little different than usual. We were considering the four aspects of Advent to be the context, the promise, the waiting, and the fulfillment. Now, the context is that inherent need and the inherent hope that humankind holds together. And that promise is that belief that something or someone is going to make everything right. And then there's the waiting for that to develop and play it for its way out. And today we're going to be looking at fulfillment, how this promise that was made in many cases a long time ago is actually played out, how it manifests itself. Now, there are a couple of venues, if you will, of expressing this fulfillment of the promise. The first one is the any hour. Now, if we look at fulfillment from the archetypal point of view, and we look back through the recorded history of humankind, in every culture, the most ancient of cultures, even as far back as Sumer, and then the Egyptians, and then the Syrians, and right on down the line, there's always been this presence of Advent. There's always been this context of wanting something more or needing something more. And there's always been promise that it's going to be made right. And as we study history, we find the prophecy in these ancient cultures were indeed fulfilled through some person or some situation. Over and over again, we see that happening. So even in history, we find this dynamic in operation. Then if we look at the historical or situational perspective in our Judeo-Christian New Thought tradition that we are a part of, we find the same thing. We find that context of inherent need and inherent hope, and we find the promises that were made. The Hebrews, who were considered by themselves and others as God's people, received this promise that I will be your God and you will be my people. And that promise, that prophecy was reiterated over and over again all through history of the Jewish people. And we also find that time of waiting when they had to know the prophecy but not yet see it manifested out in the open. Because one of their prophecies was that of the Messiah, the person who was going to come and set the people free. They were waiting and waiting for that to be played out in the hour. They waited for a long time for that. Because when the Hebrews were in captivity in Persia, Cyrus became the emperor and allowed the Jews to go home. And they were able to go back to the promised land, the land of their beginnings. And then, of course, that was in 538 CE, they went back and Nehemiah, the great prophet, helped them rebuild Jerusalem. So this promise that was given to them so long ago was literally fulfilled in the hour. They could see it happening. They experienced it happening firsthand. And then, of course, there was another step along the way when 1948, that Israel actually became a country. And they could officially claim this place called Palestine or Israel as their home. And that fulfillment came to be in the hour. It was obvious for everyone to see, everyone to be involved in. In Joshua chapter 23, we find the words, you know with all your heart and soul that not one of all the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled, not one has failed. So that was the confidence with which the prophet spoke. If God said it, it's going to be that way. It may take a while. It's not going to happen tomorrow, but it is going to happen. That fulfillment comes to be in the hour. So again, in the Judeo-Christian New Thought tradition, Jesus was the fulfillment of the Messiah. He was a person who showed up, and he had just a little bit of an effect on the life of the times. And since then, Christianity began after that, and you know the effect that Christianity has had on the world since that time. So there has been that fulfillment in the hour. It showed up, we saw it, we documented it, it's there. Now that's one menu of fulfillment. One way that the fulfillment of the promises that have been given shows up, and that is in the hour, in what we experience out here. Now the mistake that we make very often as we are looking in the hour, part of that mistake is we begin to think that the hour is the only way that things get manifested. And if it doesn't show up in front of me where I can touch it and count it and take a picture of it, it doesn't exist. And that's a mistake that we make. And I'll say more about that in just a moment. But another part of that mistake is that we say, okay, this fulfillment that I'm trusting in, I'm hoping for, I'm holding on for, is going to happen right here in front of me. Right here in front of me. Right here in front of me. And we hold to that. And that's the way it has to be. And if we were able to stop and look around, we find out the fulfillment's happening over here on this side all the time while we're demanding that it's right in front of us. Or we say this fulfillment is going to come in this form. It's going to look like this. It's going to be this person. It's going to be this situation. And it has to be like that. And lo and behold, the fulfillment comes in a different form altogether. The fulfillment comes, but we're demanding that it looks like this, so we miss it. That's the mistake that we often make, is putting our own human interest, our own human interpretation on how the fulfillment is going to come, rather than saying, I am open, I am ready, Spirit, show me, and I will see, and I'll participate in what's going on. So the outer manifestation in three-dimensionality, in sense consciousness out there, one way that the fulfillment of these promises comes for us. It's one way. We can be open to that, and we can experience that. But there's another way that is equally, if not more so, important, and that is not in the outer manifestation, but in the inner manifestation. Now, I know it's unique, big one, just surprising the heck out of you that I'm saying that, right? That we can get around to the inner part of it. But that's an important part of the manifestation of these promises that we've been given, is the inner part. Charles Fillmore said, if you would feed the soul on the joys of spirit, you must realize them and give thanks in prayer for the more abundant life. Then you find a great subconscious well of living water will begin to bubble up into your soul. You will come to know that hitherto you have been living in the shallows of life instead of its mighty depth. You will be blessed with the knowledge of the unity of all things, and a great peace and harmony will well up within you. So over and over again, particularly in the community, we come back to this importance of the inner, this matter of knowing what is in us. Now, I often call this spiritual grad school, because we can't just play around with this. We need to pay attention. We need to be engaged in this inner work. We need to be delivered by it, because very often the manifestation of the fulfillment of the promises that we're holding on to don't happen in the outer. And if they do happen in the outer, it takes a long time for it to play out. So it's important, again, we have a grasp of what's going on in here and are able to experience that fulfillment even though it is not seen. Does not the Bible tell us that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen? And does not unity tell us that faith is the perceiving power of the mind? So as we understand that the inner experience of this fulfillment of Advent is very, very important, we learn more and more about ourselves and about our world as we are able to see what can't be seen and to experience what can't be experienced. But faith allows us to do that. It allows us to know inwardly what can't be known outwardly, immediately. One example of that is when Jesus was called to, when Lazarus, his friend, died, he was called to go there. Jesus went to the tomb, they rolled back the stone, and before he called Lazarus forth, he said, Father, I thank you for what you're about to do, or thank you for what you've done. And then he called Lazarus forth from the dead. Jesus was able to see what was not seen. Lazarus wasn't back in the dead yet, but he saw it, he knew it. And that's what we can do as well, when we know that this truth operates on a deep inner level for you. So this birth of the Christ child that we say happened on Christmas time was an outer manifestation of the fulfillment of a promise that had been given centuries before, and even thousands of years before. That birth of the Christ child we've always looked at as an outer thing. But we teach in unity the principles of metaphysics that the birth of the Christ is an inner experience for each of us. It doesn't have to be a singular historical event somewhere in time, in some other place. The birth of that Christ consciousness happens in you and me all the time. Every time we have a new idea, that is the birth of the Christ. Every time we move to a new understanding, that is the birth of Christ. Every time we say, oh my gosh, there's the truth. That's what I've been looking for. That's what they meant when they said that all these times that I heard it. That's the birth of the Christ in you and me. And that happens all the time. That takes faith. That takes the perceiving power of the mind to see what can't be seen with your eyes. You can't see with your eyes the birth of the Christ consciousness in you. You can't tell what color it is. You can't tell what shape it is. You can't take a picture of it with your phone and carry it around with you, but it is there nevertheless. And the faith that is in us, and this is not a sermon about faith necessarily, but it's important to know that nowhere are we taught that we're going to get faith. Nowhere are we taught about an amount of faith. Jesus said if you had faith like a mustard seed, you can tell the mountain to go jump in the ocean, and it will. What that means is that the amount of faith is irrelevant. You have faith. It's like eternal life. Nowhere are we told that we will get eternal life or gain eternal life. You have eternal life, and you will not gain or get faith. You have faith. It is the perceiving power of the mind that is built into you, and it is always there. And through that operation of faith, we experience the birth of the Christ consciousness in us, which can't be seen and touched, but it can be known, it can be experienced, and that's what happens to us. When Charles Fillmore was learning about this new thought stuff, he read a lot and he heard a lot, and he said, in this battle, I will go to headquarters. That was a birth of the Christ consciousness in Charles Fillmore. Myrtle Fillmore, who was struggling to heal herself of a terminal illness, said, I am a child of God, therefore I do not inherit sickness. That was a birth of the Christ consciousness in Myrtle Fillmore. Robert Frost said, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I chose the one less traveled by, and it has made all the difference. That was the birth, a birth of the Christ consciousness in him. Martin Luther King stood before thousands of people in Washington, D.C. and spoke those immortal words, I have a dream. That was a birth of the Christ consciousness in him. And for many people who heard that and were moved by that, and even today it still moves us, that is, again, a birth of the Christ consciousness in us. President John Kennedy stood before America and said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And that was a birth of the Christ consciousness in him and many people who heard that and were inspired by that and moved by that. That was perceived and experienced by faith alone. When I was 12 years old, at a revival meeting, Murphy Creek Baptist Church in Louisville, Mississippi. I was particularly moved one night of the services, and I went up and knelt down at the communion table, which wasn't a practice that we were done in our church, so it was a little bit unusual. But I can remember where I did it for 5 minutes ago, kneeling down and saying, dear God, give me a heart that cares for people. And that was the birth of the Christ consciousness in life. Of faith, it was faith that allowed that to happen. So, yes, the outer manifestation of the fulfillment of the promises of Advent are important, absolutely. But the inner experience is equally, if not more so, important. That we are able to perceive what can be seen, we're able to experience what can be photographed, we're able to know what can't really be described. Again, from Charles Fillmore, no man yet knows all of life's joys, not will be until he has become, until he has come into the full understanding of spiritual communion with God. No man knows the fullness of life or his joys until he has prayed in meekness and thanksgiving and has received the sweet, pure realizations of spirit. True and lasting joy arises from within. The nature of the deep inner life is revealed only to those who spiritually penetrate into its source. So during this fourth week of Advent, let us certainly recognize and honor and celebrate all the traditions that come from the fulfillment of promises given. The Muslim faith is rich in traditions and rituals and ceremonies. The Jewish faith is deep in rituals and ceremonies. And he thought is, we have a few. The few that we have, I encourage you to take advantage of. But during this time, let us appreciate the fulfillment that has come in so many different ways in the outer. And let us appreciate that experience of the inner, direct realization of the fulfillment of that event. Because it is ongoing. It is ongoing now. If we were just bound to history, if we were just bound to the same old Christmas carols, if we were just bound to the same old tradition, it would get old, and for many people it has. There are people who have thrown away Christmas because it's old, it's out of date, whatever else. But when we have our active faith, and when we know that this Advent is happening on an inner level as it is on the outer, it goes on and on. And it can be, as I shared with you several weeks ago, we can choose to make every Christmas something new, something different. A deeper experience because it happens in here. Same with Easter and any other time of spiritual celebration. If we know this is primarily an inner experience, it is a dynamic of faith going on, it can indeed be deeper and wider and more real to us every time we experience it. So again, as we go through this week leading up to Christmas, whatever tradition it is that you choose to honor and celebrate and experience, you might even try something you've never ever dealt with before. You might learn about some tradition or some practice out of another tradition that has meaning for you. You might find that lighting the lights makes a difference for you. You might find that one of the other traditions has a ceremony that speaks to you, and honor it and bless it and participate in that outwardly, all the while honoring the truth of the inner, which gives it power and gives it movement. I want to end by sharing a poem that I think I've read to you before, that for the poet was definitely one of those Christ moments, one of those birth of Christ consciousness within. When eternity had inhaled that first beginning gasp, and newness sang with virginal voice, there I was, loving you. Round and over, over and round, millions of times spinning, endings begot in beginning, beginnings offsprung from the end, there I am, loving you. Even when eternity had exhaled that last ending breath, and all creation pauses in complete stillness, there I will always be loving you. Happy Bull Sunday, thank
you. And of course, we take this time where we remember with gratitude the value of our spiritual life, the value of our inner work. And many of us here at Unity of Pompano see that as one of the most important things we can do with our finances is to tithe, to take off the top, whatever it's going to be that we decide to give to our spiritual community, and do that first. And then watch, sometimes marveling, at the money being there that we need for the rest of that week or that month. So those of you who still have income coming in and feel that you can, we would really appreciate your gifts all year long, but especially at this time of year. And for those of you who We can't thank you enough. For indeed, although the tradition through the many, many centuries has been that church should be free,
we all know it isn't free. And so we thank you for sustaining us.
So why don't you have your gift right now and let us bless it. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. An ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it, we experience it, we freely give it. And it multiplies itself around us. And so it is.